WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 6th of February, 2019. This morning I'm going to play... The biopic radio... Dramatizations intended to reveal little-known lives from Black Americana, celebrate Black History Month. According to the Encyclopedia of Old Time Radio, it is perhaps the strongest plea for Negro rights ever heard on American radio. The show's title is Destination Freedom. In this particular episode I'm going to be airing this morning is episode 5. Destination Freedom ran from the 27th of June 1948 to the 13th of August 1950 on WMAQ in Chicago. It aired on Sunday mornings. First 13 or so episodes were sponsored by an all-African-American newspaper called Chicago Defender. And in 1950, well, actually after those 13 episodes, it went to became a sustained show. This morning's episode, The Making of a Man, had an original air date of the 25th of July, 1948. Here we go. Come on, I'm running a little bit behind this morning. This is Arthur with the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Here is The Making of a Man from the show titled Destination Freedom.
Before I'd be a slave, I'd be buried in my grave and go home to my Lord and be free.
Destination Freedom. The Chicago Defender and station WMAQ bring you Destination Freedom, a special radio series dramatizing the great democratic traditions of the Negro people, interwoven in the pageant of history, and a part of America's own Destination Freedom. This week, Destination Freedom tells the story of Frederick Douglass, outstanding leader of the Civil War period, and internationally known spokesman for the rights of men. The dramatizations will be in two episodes. The first entitled, The Making of a Man.
John Brown's body lay a moldering in the grave. The Union Army was marching on. The tall man from Illinois was in the White House. There was an eternity behind you, and an eternity ahead of you. You were like a minute in the middle of it. You went in to see President Lincoln.
The president's waiting to see you, Mr. Douglass. This way.
Thank you.
Mr. President, your visitor.
Thank you, Chief.
I'm here to represent the freedmen, Mr. President. I'm Frederick Douglass. I was once a slave and a fugitive. Now I'm editor
of... Mr. Douglass, You needn't introduce yourself to me. I know you.
Oh, you do?
In fact, I heard about you long before you heard about me. It's good you came. You've been through enough to know why the soldiers are out there. Sit down. Let's talk this thing through. Yes, I know you, Mr. Douglas. I know you.
I know you, he said. And you wondered how much the tall man knows. Does he know the year you were born? It was never told to you. Does he know who your mother was? You saw her only once. Does he know the boy who learned the art of reading and who taught the slaves on a Maryland plantation until the master nailed the law up against the gate?
Any person, slave or free, that teaches a slave to read or write will be imprisoned for 2 years and whipped 39 lashes according to the law of this state. Signed, Master Jerry Auld. There now.
And at noonday, the boy stood looking at it with a fellow slave. You were the boy.
What's it read, Frederick? Say it out loud.
You can read it, Sandy. You've been in my class a month now. It
takes more than a month to read writing. I can't make it out.
It says if I'm caught teaching you to read, I'll be lashed. If I'm caught.
Are they suspicious?
Maybe he missed his books out of the library.
I put them back when I cleaned it. I put them back.
He's coming. Look away from the sign. Look away.
Nice to see you reading the bulletin, boy. You can spread the news.
Me reading?
Frederick, I'm talking to. Books disappear from my library at night. They walk back in the morning. The mistress taught one slave how to read.
I was a child then.
You're impudent and wild now. The law knows reading and writing unfits a man to be a slave. You've had too much of it. That Yankee editor's freedom paper's been seen in your cabin.
You told me about that, sir.
I'll tell you again. Get it in your head. You're not a man, you're a slave. It's the Lord's will. If I tell you spreading unrest, I'm calling in the slave breaker.
Oh, no, sir.
I sure will. One bad sheep will lead a flock astray, and I'll not have it. Now get to your work. Stop dreaming.
Frederick, I can read it now. It means classes are over.
You still believe knowledge will make you free?
I do.
Meet Sundays in my cabin for Sunday school.
Where we get the books? I'm afraid to get...
Never mind the master's books. I've got a freedom paper here. We'll practice reading it. Never mind the master's books. Get around the candlelight.
All right.
I'll spread out the paper. Now read from the left. Sandy, you're here. Read first.
It says, every slave on the American soil must be freed.
It says that. Hush now. Look at the spelling as well as the meaning. You, Tom.
Then it say, the state that cannot tolerate every man being free and equal is despotic.
Oscar?
All right. And by peace or by blood, slavery must die.
If any dying's to be done, I could hang you all.
Oh, Lord.
Hold still. The guard's outside. I said one bad sheep would lead a flock astray. It's Frederick I want. You go to the slave breaker. Your teaching's over. Now you'll learn.
You've already learned that knowledge in the hands of the enslaved was more feared than a gun. You remembered it while the master talked to Covey, the slave breaker.
He's big for his age, Covey. Can you handle him?
I make my living handle him, Mr. Auld.
And to keep your living, break him in quick. He'll fetch a smart price in a couple of years.
He'll bring more if he knows his ABCs. Hey, Frederick, come over here.
Yes?
You say yes to your master's boy. You ain't no man, you're a slave. You hear?
And you feel the lash. You twist and you bend, but you don't break. And when the whip stops...
You ain't crying. Ain't you got no feeling? If you're thinking of escaping, you get out of your head. We'll watch you. Now get off to your cabin. And no rations. Get off!
You went to your cabin that day and every day with your brain whirling. At night, you'd roll on the straw, thinking and searching. And one night, your bedmate woke and wondered...
Fred.
Yeah?
You still awake?
I'm awake.
Thinking?
Thinking.
You wouldn't get past the gate. They check.
I'll get past.
Shh.
I'll get...
Come in, the master. Pretend you're asleep.
Hold up the light. One escaped last night. Frederick here?
Yeah, they don't get far without a pass. Frederick's asleep.
One bunk's empty.
Yeah, just the kitchen boy's gone, sir. His master wrote out a pass.
You watch for agitating abolitionists leaving their papers for slaves to read. One puts a foot on my land and shoot him, same as you would a dog.
Depend on me.
And hurry with Frederick. It's taking too long to break him. Too long.
Did you hear him?
I hear him.
They mean it. They're going to break you.
Not if I get a pass and leave.
You get a pass.
You get me some paper and pencil from the library. I'll write out a pass and sign the name of our master to it. Freelander, say. I'll write, this is to certify that I, the undersigned, have given the bearer my permission and full liberty to go to Baltimore
and spend the Easter holidays. It's not to be molested. Signed, W.H. Freelander. Old man Freelander's got a nice piece of handwriting.
I'll be going up the road if you don't mind, sir.
I do mind. You run into the wrong master, boy. I'm Freelander. I write good, but not this good. Guard, grab it.
They lashed you and took you back to the slave breaker.
I'd kill you now. Only it's a Sabbath, and I respect the Sabbath. It's you or me, the master says. I respect the Sabbath. But come Monday, you'll break or die.
You looked at him. You knew he meant it. That night you thought of dying, and you thought of living free. You weighed them. When Monday came, you knew which one you'd settle for. When the lash came, you were ready.
You break or I'll kill you. Hey!
Stop!
What? Hey, you let go of my whip.
Don't
let go.
Hit me again.
I can have you shot for defying me. Let go.
Take your hands off me. You. Help! Help!
You went down on the ground. You rolled over and grabbed for your life. You knocked away his pistol. You twisted the whip out of his hand and struck back until you saw that you had won.
You won't tell a master about this, will you? Be here. I couldn't break you. I'll never get another job. Slave breaking's not my choosing. It's the way things are. If I don't break you, they have no use for me. It's a game the masters play, one against the other. They play the poor whites like me against the blacks like you. They win, we lose. You won't tell them you beat me, will you?
You didn't tell. For in that second, you had learned the ABCs of slavery. You were still a slave, but you felt free. And you told yourself,
he who is whipped easiest is whipped most.
You were never whipped again. You went back unbroken.
If the lash won't break, your work will. I'm hiring you out for the ships in Baltimore. You won't find time to read and dream and look for agitators to help you. It'd be too much work to let you be troublesome. Right, too much work.
Help us this year, Tim. Hurry, boy. Hurry, boy.
Ma, bring me up that roller. Come now, shake a leg. Shake a leg.
Hey, boy, run, bring me a cold chisel. Come on, hurry, boy, hurry. I want
to... You worked. You hurried. Your money went to a master. You saw the way free labor worked for wages. And when you were alone, when you were below deck working the bellows to melt ship's copper, you found a freedom paper and tacked it on the wall. While the bellows breathed, you read the magic words.
In a state of nature, all men are equal in rights, but are not equal in power. The weak cannot protect themselves against the strong. Civil laws must guarantee the equality of rights.
Frederick, who are you talking to?
No one, mate. Just myself.
Talk up some hot metal, they're calling for it.
I'm heating it, sir. It's about ready.
Say, what's this?
What?
This paper on the wall, this garrison paper.
I got it off the dock.
Get it off this ship. Put it in the fire where it belongs. People getting sick of this agitator. They don't listen to him no more. You play smart, boy. Keep your mind on your work.
You kept your mind on the free words. And when the time was ripe, you wrote another pass. This time you took the right road. You took a ship to New York. You hid among the passengers until it docked in the harbor. And you followed through the streets, a fugitive in the land where you were born. And you flinched when an arm touched you. You saw the posters, reward signs for runaways. And when you saw a crowd around a hall, you stood on the edge of it.
You needn't stand out here, mister. You're welcome inside. You don't know me. I'm John Brown. You?
Frederick Douglass.
You're looking for the North Star? You can trust me.
I'm looking for freedom.
That's what this meeting's all about. Come in, sit down. Old Garrison's trying to make him fight against the slave trade. The crowd's a little rough tonight.
Listen, friends. Friends, I'm telling you, freedom's your business, not just the bondsman. Listen.
We've listened enough. Stop your hands,
please. Get out of town, troublemaker. Get out of town. As long as there are men in bondage,
he calls slaves men.
Slaves aren't men.
Friends. Listen to me. Listen.
It's a rough crowd tonight, friend.
Why do they talk that way? Why don't they listen to it?
Because they've never seen or heard those he speaks about. Would you take the platform and speak?
Speak? Me?
Yeah. We need a new voice.
What could I tell them?
Tell them the truth. They've never heard it from a slave. Tell them.
I'm a little speaker.
You'll be one. The men on the platform need your help. Will you give it?
I'll try.
Good. Come on, don't be afraid of the crowd. The roar's worse than the bite. Follow me to the platform. Mr. Garrison, here's a new voice for him to hear. Can he speak?
Well, if they'll listen, go on.
All right, Douglas, you stand before the roster.
Sit down! Sit down!
Fred Douglas, a man from Baltimore wants a word with you.
He's no man, he's a slave.
Listen now, listen, give him a chance.
Go on, speak.
Friends and free men, a few weeks ago I was a slave. Now I'm free. I'm not here to prove slaves are men. Nobody doubts it.
Listen to him.
There are laws forbidding the teaching or reading or writing to slaves. And forbidding travel to slaves. If slaves were not men, would they need such laws? I'm not here to convince you slavery's wrong. A system that makes men work without wages, beats them, hunts them down, starves them, needs no argument to prove it wrong. You say, jail the agitators and the radicals and we'll have peace. You're wrong. If every anti-slavery tongue in the world were cut off, every such paper, book, pamphlet searched out, gathered up, burned to ashes and their ashes thrown to the four winds, still there would be no peace until all men are free in public opinion as well as the law. If you want peace, first, free your brothers.
You had spoken, but the hall was quiet, and you wondered if they heard or felt or understood. And Garrison asked them,
is he who spoke a slave or a man?
He's a man!
Now there was thunder, and you stood under it. You saw a light in the darkness, a wedge opened. A way to change a nation was there. You knew it when the next day you sat down with the men who knew where to go, who wanted you to go with them.
We can change the opinion of half the country about slavery if you join us, Douglas. Work with me and the Reverend Wendell Phillips here.
We've done a lot. We can do more with your help.
You've got my help. Where do we start?
Now, hold on. The Anti-Slavery Society needs you. Let's understand the rules of the society.
You see, there's a good many abolitionists. We all agree on freeing the slaves, but we differ on how to do it. We keep away from politics. Yeah, the slaveholders run politics anyhow.
Yes, but doesn't the Constitution say that...
The Constitution, Douglas, is words. We live by action.
The Constitution allows for slaveholding, doesn't it? When you get experience, you'll see the only way to end slavery is to dissolve the Union.
If I learn different?
Cross that bridge when you get there. We fight not with guns, but by moral persuasion.
I'd like to look for a better way.
Yeah, we're all looking for better ways. The work's dangerous. Some of our people have been killed. George is offering $5,000 for Garrison's head.
They'll offer much more for yours.
They'll send mobs after you. Your only weapons will be your words. Sharpen them until the people feel them. Make them hear you, and we'll win. Is there anything else you need to know?
Yes. Where do I speak first?
You spoke first to those around you. Factory workers, mill hands, sailors, and servants. You were the living story of slavery. You looked back and pulled out of your past the lash, the slave markets, the hunger, the laws. You talked in schoolhouses, churches, warehouses, docks. Mobs followed you. You were laughed at and shot at, but you spoke through the crowds. You told merchants in Boston.
Those who profess to favor freedom and yet not want agitation are men who want crops without plowing up the ground. If we get freedom from all the oppressions heaped on us, we must pay for it by labor, sacrifice, and if need be, with our lives.
You told lawmakers in New Hampshire,
if you demand liberty for yourself, grant it to your neighbors. If you claim the right to think for yourself, allow your neighbor the same right. If you claim to act for yourself, allow your neighbors to act.
You told teachers in Ohio,
no man can put a chain around the ankle of his fellow man without finding the other end of it fastened about his own neck. To free yourselves, free the unfree.
And you told people everywhere,
the American people stand each for all and all for each, without respect to race or color.
You talked to them in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Indiana, Illinois. You went to England, Ireland, and Scotland. And when you came home and talked again, you saw they had listened. You heard them talk in train stations.
Ticket for Savannah.
Uh-huh.
Think what Fred Douglas going around the country saying is right, don't you?
Uh-huh.
No, I ain't arguing. Just thinking's all. I ain't ready to fight yet.
Uh-huh.
You had a plumber in Springfield.
It's this way, boss. If they keep some folks slaves and some folks free, then how are the free folks that don't have slaves to work for them going to make a living? I'd take you. If you had a slave, I'd be out of a job. Fred Douglas is right. This thing's got to be outlawed. It ain't safe.
Then naturally, us barbers don't talk much while we're working on a customer. But this fellow is crying so much about freedom in the old country. I often said, Fred Douglas says freedom's like charity. It begins at home. If you ain't got it at home, you can't give none to the old country. Ooh, did I cut too much off, mister? Now, naturally, I don't talk much when I work.
You talk to them and they talk to you. You change them. And you saw they were changing you. You built a newspaper to talk to them. You got to see what they thought about the words of the Constitution. You read them over. They looked different to you. But they still looked the same to an old friend who came into your print shop while the press ran.
See, you're running a paper of your own, Douglas.
There's room for 100 papers. What we're after...
We're not after the same things.
You mean my speaking against splitting the Union into two nations? One North, one South.
We agreed on that.
Yes, but now that I've looked over the Constitution...
What's the Constitution got to do with it? Can it stop slaveholding? Can it stop discrimination, segregation?
I believe it can. It says...
Just words. Just a pack of meaningless, empty words.
Now, see here. Negroes, Jews, Gentiles are people, aren't they?
Get to the point.
Well, the Constitution reads, we the people, not we the white people, not we the privileged class, we the high, not we the horses, sheep, swine.
Get to the point.
We the people. That's the point.
And who'll enforce this thing?
I've been going into politics lately.
Douglas, it's against the society's rules.
I know.
I don't trust the Whigs and the old parties, but well, there's a new man, Abe Lincoln. That man.
He'll be just like all the others.
I'm banking on him being different.
Douglas, how long have we been together?
Well, on 20 years.
And we've done well for the cause. We've changed people's minds.
In the past, yes. Now we've got to change. Slavery's changing. Industry's changing. We can't stop slaveholders with talk. We've got to change our methods.
I never thought there'd be a day when we'd be enemies. The society'll go on. It'll go on without Frederick Douglass.
You lost the star that had guided you. You're on your own road now. You look back at your old friends and some were behind you, unchanging, unmoving. And then one called you to his home for breakfast. He was John Brown. He was 10 years ahead of you.
Moral persuasion will never free a slave, Douglas. It spreads every year, state by state.
I try to tell people that.
Moral persuasion. Preaching. Underground railways. Pleading politics. You try them all. I see the only way to get this curse out of the country is to put guns in the hands of the oppressed.
What do you mean?
Douglas, some men and I are going to a place called Harper's Ferry.
I know of it.
They're taking the arsenal there. We'll build a fortress in the mountains around it. I know those mountains. And we'll build an army.
That would be war.
Slavery is a state of war, Douglas. I thought you'd see it. I wanted you to come with me.
Oh, Harper's Ferry is a steel trap. You won't have a chance.
There's a chance of bringing the country to its feet, ready to fight. That's the chance I'll take. You coming?
Is that the only way?
Can you find another way?
I'm searching. If you'll wait...
I'm done with waiting and searching. I've found my way. I wanted you for a special purpose. When I strike, the bees will begin to swarm. I wanted you to help me hive them. I'll hive them alone.
You saw him go, and your heart cried out to him. You went back to the newspapers and platforms and lecture halls and talked. But there was a feeling that you had lost the track. Does a tall man in the White House know how you felt about John Brown? How your words of peace and persuasion were blown to dust when you heard the newsboys shout,
Extra! Extra! John Brown caught at Harper's Ferry! Read all about it!
Extra! Extra! John Brown to be hanged! Extra! Extra! John Brown to be hanged!
You went before the crowds that jeered him, thinking of the thin, stern man who'd gone out to make the Constitution come alive, and you spoke again.
They say John Brown failed. He did fail to save his life. But he did not go out to save his life. He went out to strike against slavery. Was it in vain? I answer 10,000 times, no. John Brown has begun the war that will end slavery. Until he struck, we fought only with words, votes, compromises. John Brown cleared the way. We go his way.
The stars above in heaven now are kindly looking down. The stars above in heaven now are kindly looking down. The stars above in heaven now are kindly looking down on the grave of old John Brown.
2 years passed like a day, and the soldiers went the way of John Brown. You remember when the tall man from Illinois came into the White House, and he says he knows you. How much does he know?
I know all about you, Fred Douglas. We both climbed the ladder the hard way. When this war's done, when we get a nation all free, we'll both go further. Shall we shake on it?
You took his thin white hand into your large black hand and shook on it. Outside, the Union soldiers are marching on. John Brown's body is a moldering in the grave. There is an eternity behind you and an eternity ahead of you. This was 1 minute in the middle of it.
John Brown's body lies a-moldering in his grave. John Brown's body lies a-moldering in his grave. John Brown's body lies a-moldering in his grave. But his soul goes marching on.
Just heard Destination Freedom's dramatization of part one of the story of Frederick Douglass. Next week, we bring you the second and final chapter in the life of this outstanding American statesman. Destination Freedom is written by Richard Durham, and the production is under the direction of Homer Heck. The cast included Ernie Andrews, Oscar Brown, Donald Gallagher, Ken Griffin, George Kluge, Sherman Marks, Art McCoo, Fred Pinkard, Jess Pugh, and Russ Reed. The singer was Greg Pascal. Richard Shores composed the special music, which was played by Elwin Owen and Bobby Christian. This is Dick Noble inviting you to be with us again next week for another in our series on the Negro in Democracy, Destination Freedom. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Okay. That was Destination Freedom, show titled The Making of a Man. The original air date was the 25th of July, 1948. It aired from the 27th of June, 1948 to the 13th of August, 1950 on WMAQ in Chicago. Despite that saying that was NBC, it never appeared. It was never syndicated nationwide. It's a localized show in the Chicago area that was briefly sponsored by an all-African-American newspaper, Chicago Defender. It was created and written by Richard Durham. He was an African-American writer who, once he two years after writing it, he would go on to write for other notable radio programs. And he was never on the staff of WMAQ. He was strictly a freelancer. And there you also heard all the characters. You know, they gave the credits there at the end because the entire repertoire company was headed by African Americans with just a few white folks carrying the supporting roles. Again, according to the Encyclopedia of Old Time Radio, it's perhaps the strongest plea for Negro rights ever heard on American radio. So, in celebration of Black History Month, I'll go ahead and play the second act of that next week. There might be some training. I don't know. I signed up for training, so I don't know if I'm going to have a trainee. What I got next, I'm going to find it here. I found this album looking through the WMFO library. Well, I last year. It's called Guess Who's Coming Home. Looked pretty interesting. Just got a gentleman smoking a cigarette on the cover. He's obviously in Vietnam. It's called Black Fighting. Men recorded live in Vietnam. This was put together by Wallace Terry. Recorded, edited, and narrated by Wallace Terry. He was a Time Magazine war correspondent during the Vietnam War. According to the album, this was released in 1972. I believe Vietnam ended in 1974, official withdrawal. So I would imagine this was compiled before 1972, and some of the jacket here is kind of torn and missing some spots. It says he was there with Tet and Hamburger Hill and all that, all those notable ones that some people just know strictly through movies. But I don't know. I believe I'm in the Safe Harbor area. I only listened to a little bit of this. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to play it. If it gets too risky, I might abandon it, but we'll see. Thanks for listening. This is Arthur on the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Tufts Freeform Radio here in Medford.
I woke up over here. I started waking up in the world. And then I faded to the bad motherfucker color. Now, my eyes just said, ah. We've seen things that really make you want to freak. I mean, blow your mind and what they've been through in the bush and plus what they have to go to back in the world. They can't face it. They're ready just to get down and start another civil war. Just like the chapter in Elridge Cleaver's book called Lazarus, come forth. Come home, bro. Wake up. Open your motherfucking eyes. Pimp, peep, motherfucking peep.
Peep it. Hear it. Listen. To the black soldiers in Vietnam, schooled in the arts of war as no generation of blacks in American history. They are fed up with dying in a war they believe is the white man's war. They are coming home determined to get their share, even if it means turning to violence. Black soldiers who died in wars before were forgotten. Did you ever hear of black soldiers who fought the Indians for the Pilgrims, who died at Valley Forge, who turned the tide of the Battle of New Orleans, who were massacred in the Civil War, who led Teddy Roosevelt up San Juan Hill, who drew the praise of France in World War I, and who commanded tanks for George S. Patton. This is Wally Terry. For more than 2 years, I was in Vietnam with black soldiers of today. When they first came to Vietnam, they were anxious to prove themselves in the most integrated war in American history, sharing the leadership, sharing the foxholes, and sharing the plastic bags. Blacks account for only 11% of the American population, but in Vietnam, up to 22% of the dying. Then the war soured. Black progress at home began to fade. The mood changed. Then came a second war. Black against white on a double battleground. Racial slurs, Confederate flags, cross burnings, knifings, killings. The black soldiers you hear in this album are real. They were recorded in Vietnam. Their names are omitted, and you will understand why. Their language and anger may frighten you or amuse you. You may not like what they say. You may not believe that the conditions they relate are real, but they are. And their anger is growing to bases and countries around the world, like here at Tinshaw, the Navy base in Da Nang.
Times are changing. The black man is not the only one who feels that this war shouldn't be going on. We don't have any business here.
The reason why I think that we shouldn't be over here, simple reason is because we have a war going on back home, and we should first clean up our own backyard before we try to clean up someone else.
I don't think we should be over here because it always was the black man fighting the yellow man for the white man, and it shows in cases where the white man is with the white man. Why didn't he drop the bomb on Germany when he was fighting Germany instead of dropping it on Japan? He don't drop anything that harmful on the people that considered the same as he is, so why should we be here fighting a war for him to profit off? And shit, the money we spending here could be helping our people back in the States in more ways than one.
I volunteered to come over here. I came over here to get raided and get me some more dough. I give a heck about the Vietnamese anyway or another. I can take them or leave them. So personally, I came over here for me. I didn't come over here for the United States. Nobody else, just for me. When I get myself financially secured, get my degree, then I can help somebody else. But till I do that, I'm gonna help me.
I used to work over here at Tin Shaw Gallery. Buku Vietnamese women, you know, over there working for me. Now, for me to say something to them is just like talking to a brick wall. But, you know, I say something to them and they'll go up and tell the man. They'll cry to the man, and the man, you know, he just act as though I'm not even there. Yeah. Vietnamese will come first before you do. You're supposed to be looking out for their pride. Now, I'm an American serviceman, you know. I'm over here supposed to be fighting this war for him, helping him out and shit, you know. I'm just up here on a bullshit tip anyway. Hell no, I don't think this is a black man's war.
Used to go over to the USS Tripoli. That's the fucking ship. All the brothers on the ship had to get their hair cut, and if they didn't get their hair cut, we got put in the brig. And what they did, when they caught a brother with an afro, they just took him down to the brig and cut all his hair off and threw him in jail. And here there was all these beast motherfuckers walking around here with their hair looking like goddamn girls, and we can't wear our hair motherfucking 3 inches long. The motherfucking regulation is 3 inches. And most of the brothers can wear an afro, the hair don't be motherfucking 2 inches. And why we gotta get our hair cut, that's what I wanna know.
What do you think of the Black Panthers?
I think that's the best thing the Negro got going for him, cause I'm gonna join him time I get back there with a black man. Well, my home is in Michigan, but I'm settling in Frisco, so I'll be close to him. I ain't going no farther than Frisco, so I'll be there for every meeting and every burning. After 12 months in Nam, I think I owe some to my people.
To me, I think the Black Panthers is what we need as an equalizer.
Man, you got a right to speak his own opinion.
Hey, man, what the fuck you, Dixon? Don't be interrupting me, motherfucker. Wow, man, why can't I say my motherfucker? Here, eat the motherfucker, eat it. Take it, man. Take the thing, man.
Listen, look at the people. Look at them. We supposed to be conducting this manner.
Why don't you tell the dude to lay dead then, man?
What I was saying is, I think the Black Panthers is what we need as an equalizer. The Beast got his KKK. Plus, he got his good points, too. As far as the Black Panthers is concerned, it gives them something to fear, just as they've given us something to fear all these many years.
Well, when the Panthers first started out, from what I understand, they was to keep the beast from fucking over the people when they demonstrate. And the honkers made the Panthers as violent as they are. And I figure anytime you got the fucking KKK, we've been kicking our people's ass and burning crosses and fucking over our people, and then you start fighting force with force, then the motherfuckers start hollering they gotta be communist inspired and a whole bunch of shit like that. But you understand, I think the Panthers, I would join them and I would help kill all these honky motherfuckers, cause do unto him before he do it to you. And that's what you fuck around long, that's what they gonna do. He done did it everywhere else and he getting around to you. And he say looting. I mean, just not the problem of looting. He looted our fucking people from Africa. He brought us here, looted the fucking land from the Indians, and then work your motherfucking ass for nothing. And now when you start fighting back, striking back, kicking ass, then the man wanna holler, you motherfuckers be nice, and a couple of times and quit you from riding. Strictly, I go for riding, but I don't go for going to the store looting without no heat with you, cause if the man shoot at you, you gotta shoot at him back. Because I ain't gonna steal no $10 shirt and have a man shooting at me. But if I take a $10 shirt and the man shoot at me, I'm willing to shoot back at him and put some holes in his motherfucking ass, because you're a taxpayer and you paying his motherfucking salary, and you don't pay him to shoot at your motherfucking ass. You paying him for protection.
Look here, I got to go now, but before I want to say this, you asked a question, does you think the black man belong over here? Well, for one reason, I think he do. The black man has to prove himself equal in every field. He got to be able to prove to himself that he can do what the white man can do. We got a bigger wall back home, sure, but you know you got to sacrifice to get anything.
Yeah, but you got to know.
Wait a minute, like I said, man.
Kiss no ass,
I'm not talking about kissing no ass. I'm making a statement, man, about the position. You got to prove yourself equal to everything.
The black man today doesn't have to prove anything.
We are a race of people. We have our culture, we have our background, our ancestors. Why associate at all with the beasts? We have nothing in common. Perhaps we can live with them, but we must live according to our origins. We were the first people here. Civilization began in Africa. We want what is rightfully ours.
Because of racism, many blacks at Tenshaw got more punishment, more time in the stockade than did whites. I talked to a black lawyer who spent a year defending them, Navy Lieutenant Owen Heggs.
I think that as the military represents in microcosm the society we live in, black people today in the military, from PFC through 05, represent the black movement in our country. Either they say, hell no, we won't go, or, yeah, I got to go, and I'm here, but I'm not going to take no licks on me. I'm not going to come 12,000 miles from home to be shit on by some girl in the EM club who's been hanging around with a bunch of Southerners. She doesn't know me, and I don't know her. But she calls me a nigger. Why? Because somebody taught her. The young black people in this war in Vietnam now, because they are the ones who represent a new generation. They are the ones who represent a new train of thought. They are the ones who ain't gonna take no more shit. They are the ones, you see. So I think the problem exists because we have a new generation come a long way from home when they don't want to come a long way from home, and they got to take the same licks on them they got to take back in Philadelphia and Detroit and Watts and Huff and Harlem and Bedford-Stuyvesant, and they're not ready for it. And they're not going to put up with it. White people haven't changed. The same white people in the military today were in the military in 1930 and 1940, basically. What has changed, I think, is the black population in the military.
Angered by Confederate flags flying over the battlefields, black Marines in Da Nang designed a flag of their own, green for youth, red for the blood they shed, and black for Africa. I talked to them at their barracks, the little ghetto.
In April of 1968, the day after Martin Luther King died, there was a mass flag raising, and the flags that were flying were not American flags. They were not black power flags. They were Confederate flags. And they flew for approximately 3 days, and nobody said anything about it. Well, the brothers got together. When we presented this fact to the upper echelon, within, I would say, about 4 or 5 hours, these flags were down. Now, I don't know if it was a threat of our retaliation or the fact that we made the presence of these Confederate flags known. Like, if a man can ride down the road and can't see a 15 by 20 foot flag flying over the area in an open view, I think the man is blind and he shouldn't be over here in the first place.
The first time I ever really peeped the beast was when I got to high school. I got thrown in a factory school, one of the brain factory school. The motherfuckers try to throw all this shit in their head. He's supposed to come out a genius or some shit. Yeah. So what if I go to the Naval Academy? If I go to Princeton, I go to Yale or Harvard over there. I'm still a motherfucking black man. I'm over looking at that up at this motherfucker. Who he think he is and shit like that. You know what I mean? You know, my mom used to whip my ass to make me go to school. You know what I mean? I'm glad she did that. You know. Oh, this is what my old man tell me when I dropped out of college, you know, and told him that I was going in to suck. He said, son, you aren't bulletproof. What are you fighting for? You know what I mean? This motherfucker just beeped up and down on my ass, you know? But I faded wrong, you know. This is my great mistake, you know. I'm gonna spend years after I get out of this motherfucker paying for it, you know. Now I'm gonna have to regroup and retrack and just get recomposed completely.
Tell me this, what do you think the white man should be called?
Devil.
Beast.
Everything he does is in a bestial fashion.
What do you mean by that?
What do I mean by that? The way he acts, his very nature is beastly. This man has been a beast all his life. This shit has been in him from constantly fucking over people. He's got it down to a fine art.
In the Philippines, the beast went over there and told them that the brothers, at midnight, the brothers grow tails and shit like that.
Yeah. I remember when I was in Paris Island, I had a drill instructor, and this man would
come right out and say you're a nigger.
There's only about three or four colored guys in the platoon. Here, I sit down and talk to the white guys about the black man. And because I didn't smile at what he was saying, nobody hollered, you don't like a nigger, bitch. You don't like a nigger, bitch.
When I first got here, I used to sit in the mess hall and just rap. And everybody heard me, you know. Next thing I know, this man's talking treason.
That's what he said to me.
Why should I have to go to chow, sit at the same table, eat with some beast and say, this nigga this nigga this? But I tell you, if one of them ever sit at the table with me and break foul like that, he get my knife in his chest.
You think there should be more brothers as officers in the Marine Corps?
That's right. Real brothers. Sure. Depending upon real the brother. Nature, yeah.
Real make sure the brother is going to help the other brother.
Not no Negroes, but some real black
men. Brother.
Do you want integration when you get back to the world?
This is the difference between integration and having the same privileges. I want the same privileges.
Just like the man said, well, we're going to let you eat in this place right here, you know. Well, 20 years ago, you couldn't. Now, look, you can eat here. Well, thanks a lot. Well, you know, let me say thank you a whole motherfucking lot. I really appreciate it. How do you know that I really want to eat in the first motherfucking place? I grew up in a community in South Baltimore called Cherry Hill, where 40,000 black people live. I'm gonna tell you how flaky my brothers are. We had a councilman out there that's been trying to get elected for the last 10 years. A brother! Been trying to get elected for the last 10 years. It ain't nothing but black people out there. And you know this man can't even get elected. They'd rather elect this motherfucker named Friedel or Pulaski, somebody, you know. Why? You start snatching on all these old flakes, you know. Come here, flake, and all these old TTs. You can't get Tom Terrific. Come here, Tom. Get them all in a circle. And all these old so-called Negroes and colored people. And you just say, look here. People, you can't call them brothers. You can't say brothers, because they aren't in that frame of mind. They're not in that frame of mind. They have me open up the first eyelid to peep. They have me open that motherfucker up.
Do you want intermarriage?
No.
For what?
No. What? Why don't I like interracial marriage? For one thing, I don't dig a Beast Brown because she's always fronting. Sisters front too, but they front in a different way. You know what I mean? They front in a different way. When they front to get something. But a Beast Brown, she just fronting to be fronting.
A sister knows what it is to be noticed. She's got to go out there. She's got to get that bleaching cream. She got to get that hair straightened.
She knows what it
means. This is what it took 5 years ago to be noticed. She had to get that hair straightened. She had to get that bleaching cream to get that skin a little bit lighter. You know, it don't work this way. The sister now, what's she doing back in the world? She ain't using that bleaching
cream.
She put
cream, a little no water on the keep on.
And she puts that water on. She don't get that straightening cone. That straightening cone hit the garbage can 3 years ago. And that hair is just so beautiful. It is defiant. It stands up against the wind, the rain, the elements. It is out there, and it don't need nothing. It don't need nothing. It just stands up there just as proud as can be.
Going back to what you said about marrying a gray broad, she don't know nothing about when you used to get out there on Saturday morning and, you know, do this little thing just to get your child, bro. Or when you fade to the movies and whatnot, and you hopping on, and, you know, let's get this little nickel dime thing going so we can see who go to the movies. She don't know nothing about that. But she always had, she didn't have to go to no goddamn movies or skating ring, you know what I mean? Or don't know what it means to eat hot dogs every motherfucking Friday, you know what I mean? Knowing what you gonna have every day of the week, this was your meal, bro. She don't know nothing about that. You don't share any common or mutual interest whatsoever with her, you know? You start talking about, well, this is the way I grew up, so-and-so. I did so-and-so here and there and everywhere, and I slid here and I faded there, and I tipped on up here. She don't know nothing about you. You in a completely different world, bro.
If you got back home and a riot broke out, would you join it?
Hell, yes.
Why?
Why? Tell you what, bro. Why did the just like this brother rapped the cherry point last year. The chaplain tried to cool us down. Sit down, brother. No, please don't start no shit. And then bro said, chaplain, you had your motherfucking Boston Tea Party. Why can't we have our rights? Is there any difference?
Wow.
Check it. Is there any difference? That's your, I ain't even gonna say no more.
I joined you?
Talking about the match.
Why was it here to make this?
Why?
I have nothing in the first place. I have nothing to lose or win. You know, if they kicking Cracker's ass, I'm gonna get a help kick a few ass cheeks. Because I'm doing what my grandfather wanted to do and couldn't do. You know, I'm getting even with him for the things, for the times he raped my grandmother and my sisters and my aunties when they lynched my grandfather. When he took their 40 acres, that goddamn mule he's supposed to give him. Mule died, he's still a slave, right? So I'm getting even with it for that. So they got a ride going, hell yeah, I'm gonna get in the middle of it. If I get killed, fuck it.
Black Navy and Marine officers got together one night in Da Nang. Doctors, lawyers, helicopter pilots, tank commanders, and combat sergeants.
If I was a snuffy, I wouldn't fight.
You wouldn't fight?
Why should I fight?
Why should you fight?
For prejudice in America.
I'll tell you one reason why you better fight, because somebody's shooting at your big ass. And if you didn't, then you would go home without your ass.
Okay, that was Guess Who's Coming Home, is the title of the album. Black Fighting Men recorded live in Vietnam. Album was released in 1972. Put together by Wally Terry, a Time magazine war correspondent who was over there during the heart of the Vietnam War. You hear some of that. Some of that's very inappropriate, I suppose, for radio, but this is Safe Harbor, and this is Tufts, sometimes educational radio, I'm told. And it's like I said, I saw this sitting in there. It always looked interesting to me. It's not like you can just take this stuff home and listen to it and bring it back. Everything from the library here remains here at the library. So I thought I'd play it for Black History Month. Started the show with Destination Freedom, The Making of a Man, the story of Frederick Douglass. That was an all-black repertoire company created by Richard Durham. The stories were created and written by Richard Durham. Again, I'll play that next week, the conclusion of that one. Marco and Matt are not going to be in for the next 2 hours. I believe Celeste is coming in, but she has yet to arrive. I'm going to close out the show with Love, a song here. I believe it's, what am I going to play here? Instrumental. Thanks for listening. This is Arthur at the Grand Hour. Again, next week I may or may not be training somebody, so programming will be predicated by that. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. Uh-huh.